computer. I want to, yeah, there we go. You That's better. Welcome to Zen Talk number, I have no idea. It does matter. I'm going to close those blinds. Tell them it's our anniversary, sweetie.
It's our anniversary, sweetie.
Oh, that's not very exciting.
Yes, it's our anniversary. It's our 16th anniversary.
The big 1-6.
What happens on a 16th anniversary?
I don't know. Somebody do a Google search of what happens on the 16th anniversary. Maybe it's...
I think what happens is we go eat tacos.
Yeah, but usually like in the beginning it's paper.
Well, I know.
Then wood. And then maybe 16 is tacos.
That's my guess is.
I think it might be tacos.
All right.
We're going to jump in. We have questions, but is Kimmy and Kim Sauerwein the same person? Give me a thumbs up. Sweet. Before I unmute you, Kim, should I call you Kim or Kimmy?
Kim.
Well, it says Kimmy right there, sweetie.
I know. You're right. We should ask Kim and I shouldn't tell you.
Yeah. Let me unmute you. What should we call you, Kim?
It's fine. Either one is fine.
Either one is fine. Okay. I'm going to mute you for a second just so I can explain what we're going to start with.
Okay.
So we're going to start with the book of the month club is Loving What Is. We've been talking a lot about it on the podcast. And it's a book by Byron Katie. And
have we been talking about it on the podcast?
Yes.
Wow. Oh.
You should listen in.
I don't remember us talking. I'm sure we did. I think we talked about that we've been using it in Zen Talks, but
We haven't gone deep on it or anything, mentioned it. So in the book, there is, it's all about embracing the present moment. It's also about accepting the isness of the situation. And what I like about it is in the book, it gives you four questions. So let's, just if you're listening to this now on Friday, April 6th, or in the car 2 weeks from now, think of something you're stuck on, something that you're having a hard time managing your emotions about, something that you feel like you get triggered by or whatever. What Byron Katie has done is she wrote a book, and in that book she has a nice tool in your emotional self-awareness toolbox to help you get through or process certain things that you might be stuck on. And this tool is four questions. Sweetie, I'm trying to set it up.
Took a while to get there, yes.
I know, but some people have not yet heard of
it. Okay, so you're trying to start from scratch.
Yes, I am. Real quick, Amy says, the 16th wedding anniversary doesn't have a traditional gift, but the modern gift is silver hollowware, which are table serving pieces such as a teapot, sugar, and creamer set, covered casserole, anything that is hollow and has a cover. So we have china up in our attic and I brought them downstairs.
But that's not those things.
I know, but it reminds me of fancy stuff.
Yeah.
So use your china. That's my.
I say stick with tacos too.
Yeah,
tacos. Stick with tacos. Yeah, we don't need any new casserole sets. I don't bake much.
No, we don't. So in the work, there's four questions. The first question is it true? The second question is, can you be absolutely certain it's true? The third question is, what are some of the, how do you react? What happens when you believe that thought? And the last is, who would you be without that thought? And then there's a turnaround. So when I sent the email out to everybody, I think last Sunday or something like that, that if you guys wanted to put Byron Katie's work into practice, if somebody wanted to do a judge your neighbor worksheet, that we can go through it. And Kathy and I would kind of be the facilitators. And one of you all would be the people that is kind of helping to trying to process through something. So Kim has been kind enough and brave enough and courageous enough to jump in with both feet. So we have no idea what she wants to talk about, what we're about to find out. And it'll be a fun little experiment. Let's see how we do. Are you ready?
Sure.
All right. Hi, Kim. Where are you from, by the way?
Virginia.
Virginia. Well, it's nice to see you and thanks for jumping on board and thanks for doing the Judge Your Neighbor worksheet.
Sure.
What, tell me what are you stuck on or what's the thing that came up to you when you went through the worksheet?
Okay. So first I have to tell you, I'm currently hiding in my laundry room because we're getting all our windows replaced. So if it starts to get, I thought it wouldn't be loud in here, but if it feels loud, we'll just turn me off.
All right.
Okay. So I've known about the four questions because Kathy, you've brought them up earlier lots of times. So I've kind of tried to practice them with lots of different things. I've even done it with my son, with fears and things like that. And so I feel like I've been working on this for a really long time. And I feel like I'm not making any progress.
Right.
When I did the worksheet, it felt better. But I still think I need to do more with it. But I felt like we could kind of talk it through. But I think I still need to do more writing about it.
Okay.
So I picked my mom.
Okay.
Because I love my mom to death. I mean, I always feel guilty when I have issues because at the end of the day, like, she's my mom. And I love her so, so very much. But we do, we butt heads a lot. And I think, so part of my judgment is that I feel like she doesn't know who I am. And even though I'm 39, I feel like she just still doesn't accept me for who I am and kind of wishes I was someone else.
Mm, okay.
So the first part I put, I'm annoyed with mom because she never sees me for who I am. So that was number one. Do you want me to read all of them?
No, stop on that one. So but we'll just do one. Well, actually, no, that's not true. Read all of your first question or, you know, your statements.
Okay, so number two, I want mom to see me as quiet, not interested in small talk. Okay. As someone who is strong and independent and not a child. As someone who doesn't need a mother figure, but someone who just needs their mom.
Okay.
Three, mom shouldn't recognize me for who I am, not what she wishes I would be. She should own her own thoughts and feelings and not lie or project what she thinks I want or what others want. I think she lies a lot and that it bothers me a lot. But I don't think she knows she's lying.
Right.
So anyway, I need mom, to not get defensive or reactive when I'm behaving the way she thinks, when I'm not behaving the way she thinks I should.
Yeah.
I need her to focus on what she truly wants, not what she thinks others want her to think or feel.
Okay.
And mom is judgmental, juvenile. This was really hard.
Yeah, well, it's good. This is good.
And just real quick, Kim, and for everybody else, the purpose of the worksheet, the way Katie instructs people to do this, is to be as petty and as childish as you can. Because the more judgmental you are, the more likely it is you'll derive some value out of the work. If you're kind or compassionate when filling out this worksheet, it doesn't work as well. So I just want to say that to everybody.
Okay. Yeah, it wasn't kind and it felt terrible, but yeah. I did.
Then you're doing it right.
I said she's judgmental, juvenile, untrue, has no confidence, is a liar, lost, and inauthentic.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. And I don't ever want to feel like I can't. So what would I don't want to experience again? I don't want to ever feel like I can't talk to her. And I don't want to see her be self-deprecating to herself.
Oh, awesome.
Good.
Thank you for that background. Yep. So I think we should go back to question one.
Yeah. And I think we should go back to question one because I feel I wanted to hear all of them, but they all kind of come from question one. So yeah. I think since we're just doing this as a practice, let's do question one. Because I think everything else will come out through that. So read question one again.
Statement one.
I am annoyed with mom because she never sees me for who I am.
Okay. So the way I would question it is the first question would be, is it true that your mom never sees you for who you are?
I feel like yes.
Yes.
So real quick. These answers are either yes or no. So let's get a one-syllable answer from you. One more time. Is it true that your mom feels... Give me the statement one more time. Sorry for...
She never sees me for who I am.
Okay. Is that true?
Yes.
And then in the next one, you can be more... Do you know with absolute certainty that your mom doesn't appreciate or respect or understand who you are?
Well, I know the answer is no, that I don't absolutely know that with certainty, but it just feels like with certainty, yes.
Right. And that's, and there is, and I love that you're even saying it that way because there is a differentiation. It's not about doing the worksheet right. It's not about, I know Katie or, you know, Kathy or Todd wants me to answer it this way. It's really the whole point of this, and for everybody else who's following along, is to break apart belief systems and then the energy behind the belief system. Because the answer that you gave, no, I don't know it for absolute certainty, because you don't, because we're not in that other person's head. That's why it's easier to do this on somebody else than us initially. So of course you don't, but it feels that way. Okay. So that, you know, and we can kind of put a pin in that. Of course it feels that way, but no, you don't know for sure. So what that does initially is it's kind of like, I get a vision in my head of like, so this is gross. I was going to say like a kidney stone or something, like busting it open where it's like, okay, I really don't know that for sure. All that does is give you room to hear differently. That's all. It's not about being right or wrong or winning or losing. It's just like, okay, I really don't know that. But the next question is, how do you feel or what do you experience when you believe the thought, my mom doesn't understand me or see me or respect who I am?
It makes me feel really small and yeah. undervalued and a little resentful.
Yeah.
And I think, so part of that, like how I said, I've tried to do these things. And so I feel like intellectually I can answer all these questions and I know it's not true. I can even go through and recognize where she's come from and this, like her background and why she does what she does, but I still get blocked in these, like I become extremely closed off and it's because I'm so resentful. Like I feel like you're my mom. Why do I have to change who I am for you? Like you should just know who I am.
Right.
And that should be good enough. But that's where we're stuck. That's the stuck part. I feel like it's all intellectual understanding and I can't get it deeper than that.
You can't get into a practice. So I'm going to kind of break up and I'm going to mess with Katie's work for a second and insert two different things. Number one, I'm going to say really the belief system that we need to break up is because she's your mom, she should know exactly who you are. Because that to me, from what you just said, is what causes a lot of the suffering. Is you are my mom. You shouldn't act this way, be this way. I shouldn't experience you this way because you are my mom. And that is that thought in itself or belief system is what causes all the suffering behind it. Because if you took that off of everything, and again, I'm jumping way ahead, but, and you know, really question that belief of, because she's my mom, she's supposed to know everything about me. If you really question that, then there would be a little more freedom in seeing her. And I know you do intellectually, like I totally hear you, but seeing her as a human being who, just because she's your mother, it doesn't mean that it's a story that you've told yourself, that a lot of us have told ourselves, that because this is my mom, she should know everything. But we know as parents that that's not really the truth, right? Like, you know, we're the parents and, you know, like my daughter today left for school and we, Todd and I last night had to not be at an event that she was doing. And she was so angry that we couldn't be there. And this morning she was still angry. And I think that there's two things to that. Number one, she thinks my parents should be at everything because they're my parents. And then there's a part of me where I'm like, I don't really know for sure that's what she was mad about.
She was sad and we weren't certain of the cause because right. She didn't want to tell us.
So I really don't know everything about her. And she definitely has expectations of me that aren't fair. And I'm using that just to kind of break, you know, take it off the emotional part for you. Because when we're talking about your mom, it's going to hit you. The other thing that I want to insert in here is something we talked about on the podcast this week. The difference between your emotional experience with your mom and then what comes next. Because I think whenever your mom says something that somehow demonstrates that she doesn't really get you, and it could be through being disappointed in you or saying, oh no, you don't really like that. Or, you know, you could probably give me a million different examples of, you know, she totally tries to make me someone different or questions who I am. You are going to have an emotional experience with that. And I think that the idea that you won't is too much. Because Todd and I have been talking about the work a lot lately because I kind of put Byron Katie and Eckhart Tolle in a similar box. And this is why. They had some kind of consciousness breakthrough where they both claim to have lost their ego. Okay, I don't know if you guys know that, but Eckhart Tolle says, I lost my ego. Katie says, I don't have an ego. I don't suffer. That's not typical nor traditionally human. And why that's important is that you will have an emotional experience when your mom offends you. What the step is what you just said. What do you do next? So go ahead, Kim. What do you think about that?
No, I think that, that, I mean, that hits the nail on the head. Like, that's sort of my stuckness. Like, because it is, I recognize, like, I'm not going to, I can't not get triggered. Right. I mean, I have feelings and things like that. And when I try not to have feelings, that's when I get really defensive and things like that. But it's in the moment with her, like, I feel like, I think I'm putting so much pressure on it because I feel like time is just slipping away and I lose opportunities when I'm with her. She doesn't live near us. And my dad passed away 3 years ago. So it's like more in the front of my head. So it's like every time she's with us and she leaves, I'm super, I feel like, oh, I lost this opportunity to connect and be with her. But I am trying, but it's just really like, I don't know what to do. Like, I feel like I said, it's all up here, it's intellectual, but I can't control my reactions. I'm trying, but I don't know how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and let's talk about your reaction. So when you believe the thought that your mom should get you, that your mom should understand you, that your mom should not try to change who you are, what are some things that happen inside your body, inside your emotions, when you believe that thought?
I get really, really closed off. I get really quiet, and I think that probably I seem very cold.
Mm,
okay,
that's good. That's good. Go ahead.
Should we jump to four?
Well, before we do that, just to comment about that is that's good to know because again, a lot of times when we get cold or when we start to get distant, it's very hard to be like, oh, I'm not going to do this anymore. But you're going to start to just having this conversation, going through this worksheet. If or when you get cold or feel like you're shutting off again, that is going to be the signal in your brain of when I say I'm going to do something different, I don't mean you have to do it perfectly or be like, Mom, I love you. Or you're just going to maybe extend yourself in a way that you hadn't before. Like, for example, you're feeling cold and shut off, but then you're like, okay, I'm feeling cold and shut off, but I'm going to ask my mom a question about her house. Do you know what I mean? Like something not so volatile, something, but what you're doing is you're shifting yourself out of that deep hole.
Okay.
Where, you know what I mean? It's like when I say, when you're having the experience, you're having the emotional experience of I'm triggered, and then you're going to feel that. And that is, instead of being the negative, it will be your reminder of, oh my gosh, I'm triggered. And then you're like, I am going to try something else. And it could be that you say, hey, Mom, let's go sit in another room. Or it could be, Mom, I'll be right back. I'm going to the bathroom. Or it can be something so you shift the dynamic for yourself. Worry less about I'm losing time and, you know, oh, I'm shut down again. And just do that moment. Because when you shift that dynamic, like I'm going to say something different or do something different or just speak up when normally I would shut down. And you don't have to speak up about that she just offended you. You just change the subject.
Okay.
All the dynamics shift. And I can't promise you that all the dynamics will shift and everything will be perfect, but at least it'll be different than the repetitive pattern you've experienced.
So, Kim, when you said, when I asked what are some of the feelings when you think that your mom doesn't get you, you say closed off and things like that, shut down, cold. So then the next question is, the way I like to explain it is pretend that the thought that your mom is supposed to get you, pretend that that thought was not part of your brain. So like your brain is the computer and the software is the thought that your mom should get you. If you remove that software from your brain, who would you be without the thought that your mom is supposed to be a certain type of person? How would you feel if that was not even a possibility on your radar?
I would imagine that I'd be more open and receiving to her.
Okay. So then the next part is the turnaround, which is your thought was that your mom doesn't get you. And the turnaround is because you've done this work, but for those who haven't, turnaround is when you either insert yourself into the statement or if you insert the opposite belief into the statement about the other person. So can you think of a turnaround within that first statement that you had?
I don't get my mom.
That's not even the one I was thinking of. That's great.
So, can you come up with any examples or evidence of how you don't get your mom?
So again, cause I've been thinking about, I feel like talking about this with somebody else has made it a little bit more open for me to think in different ways. And I feel like I've given myself credit for understanding where my mom comes from and the relationship she has with her own mom. But now I'm starting to think, you know, I'm making my own judgments of that. And I don't really know. I only assume what I know, but I don't know what it was like to grow up the way that she did and the issues that she has. I mean, literally she became a mom at 9, like raising her brothers. Mm. So, I mean, I've only always made assumptions. We've never talked about it. Like she doesn't want to, she's very secretive about her past, which is, I mean, that's fine. But now that like we're talking through it, like I feel like I've thought all these statements that we've said, but I didn't understand them or feel them until talking with somebody. Like I think sometimes I talk too much to myself, like mm-hmm. working things out. And then when you do that, I think you talk yourself in one way, but that turnaround of maybe I don't get my mom.
Mm-hmm. So the original statement was my mom doesn't get me. And the first turnaround was I don't get my mom. Can you come up with a different turnaround from the statement my mom doesn't get me?
No.
I have two.
Okay.
And they're mine. They're not yours. So they're why I'm saying that is that they may not resonate. The two that I was thinking of, and that's why I was like, ooh, the one you had is better. Is I don't fully get me because a lot of times we get offended by people who aren't reinforcing something about us that we wish, you know, everyone would see, but it's not necessarily, if we already knew it about ourselves, then we wouldn't be offended when someone else didn't recognize it. Or my mom isn't supposed to get me.
My mom does get me.
Or my mom, well.
That's a turnaround.
Or that is a turnaround. My mom does get me. Or just, and again, you're right. For this one, I'm kind of inserting my own little Kathy version of this. But, you know, my mom doesn't need to get me. Mm-hmm. You know, like, and I like yours because it's yours. Like, I wouldn't want you to, you know, feel like the other two have to resonate as strongly as yours did. But it's like breaking apart all of those belief systems of, you know, why am I offended when she doesn't get me if I already know who I am? Mm-hmm. And then the other one is it true that my mom really is supposed to reinforce who I am all the time? Is that really her job now that I'm a grown woman? And then the other one, which is the most powerful, which is I don't maybe really know my mom or I don't get her. Mm.
That's like a fifth turnaround that's that right. I don't get her. So mm-hmm. when we say, my mom does get me, and not all the turnarounds work. So this is not a magic pill. So I need to make that clear. But can you seek any examples or evidence of where your mom actually does get you and knows who you are and sees who you are?
Yeah, I think kind of combining a little bit of the turnarounds together make it all make more sense. Mm-hmm. I think me saying that I don't get her is a valid thing. But then when you just said that maybe I don't get me, mm-hmm. and I think that's maybe a truth I've been trying to ignore. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I think there's some good stuff in there.
And I will share the reason that one came to me so quickly is I end up sometimes, especially with Todd, talking to him about what I think other people should understand about me. Don't they understand this about me? Don't they understand this about me? And what I end up getting at the end is, Kathy, don't you understand that about yourself? Because I'm putting a lot of weight on other people to reinforce and validate who I am. And I'm getting angry at people for not doing that for me. And especially if it's someone like a mom, you know, who's supposed to, you know, they're supposed to make us feel good about ourselves all the time, right? And even that's not true. That's not really a mom's job. So I just want you to know that's been my chore too.
Well, and a different take on this, that, and this probably kind of works with a few of the turnarounds. You get closed off, your words, cold, when your mom doesn't get you, when your mom treats you a certain way. And basically you're predicating your happiness or your contentment or your peace based on something that you have absolutely zero control over. It may be that your mom is your teacher to accept the isness of the situation. Now, I know that that's sometimes hard to be able to translate or practice, but if we, and say, and this goes for anybody, like think about anybody that's on this call, like our kids sometimes drive us nuts because they don't behave the way we want them to. So we get into a bad mood or we get mad or we get frustrated because they're not doing what we want them to do. And the thing is, if we are just waiting for other people to behave in a way that meets our needs, we're all going to be waiting a very, very long time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's just, it's interesting to talk it through. Like, I mean, this is really vulnerable. This is like really hard.
Yeah.
But just like the different things that you're saying back resonate in like different ways. And I mean, one main thing, like I'm the pleaser in my family. I always have been. That was sort of my role. And as I've grown up, like basically after I became a mom and after I lost my dad and like a lot of things shifted within me, or I know that I don't have to be the pleaser anymore, but mm-hmm. that doesn't make everyone in my family happy. Mm-hmm. Like even my brother called me out on it. He was like, aren't you the pleaser? Like, what's going on here? Mm-hmm. Like, why aren't you making this better? And so part of that, I think like why I think she should know me is part of my old pleasing behavior. Like, cause I want her to be happy, like that I can control her happiness in some way.
And right.
Can't anymore now that I recognize that I can't and it's not my job. I think that's where some of the back and forth is because yes. I'm no longer trying to make her happy.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So just for the sake of time, we went through these four questions in the turnaround with only your first statement, and we're not going to go through the other five, but obviously this is kind of a can of worms that you can open up and practice, you know. It's interesting because there's one thing that Katie says is it's important to write it down because mm-hmm. even as Kathy and I were reading the book, we're like thinking about our judgments in our heads. And there's something when you write it down, there's an objectivity that happens. So for anybody who is on this call, who wants to do this work, go through the write process it. Mm-hmm. of writing it down on a piece of paper. And, you know, we've created this like-minded community. If you guys want to practice this on each other on Facebook or calling each other, like Kathy and I want to be a vehicle for doing it. Don't wait for the next Zen talk to try it again, because obviously collectively our time is limited. But the reason I wanted to do this today was one, I think it's a powerful tool. And secondly, it's a little bit different than our typical call. I know that there's some brand new people that are on this call. Usually the way it happens is, you know, we have questions that people email to us and then there's people that ask questions live. There's a lot of different ways to do it, but because we chose this book, I wanted to kind of exemplify, you know, how the work can be done. So,
that's a big word.
Exemplify? Yeah. Well, exemplify. It's only three syllables.
Yeah, big.
So, anyways, Kim, hopefully you feel, have a little bit of clarity, and that's a thing. It's not like, oh, now I get it.
No, it's to me, like I said, it's just sometimes the thing about the work is it breaks apart something and then there's all these little pieces floating around that we then either do the work on or deal with or write about, because a lot of these belief systems we have, and you just kind of, you know, said this as far as understanding who you were in your family, they're ingrained belief systems about ourselves. They're not about the surface issue that's happening. They're about the core of ourselves, and then everything stems out of that. So you've just started, you know, kind of questioning all this, but what will hopefully be helpful is you at least, you know, you might get stuck again and that's okay. Like you probably will. it's not like, oh, you got stuck again. I'm not doing it right. But you had the awareness that you could have done something different. And then the next time you're like, I am going to try something. And it's just continuing to pull it apart. I visualize it like a big knot that we're just pulling apart and then everything shifts. Mm-hmm. So, okay.
Okay. So I'm going to mute Kim. Thank you, Kim, for your courage and all that good stuff. And Jennifer just said we could start a support group for whoever is struggling with these types of issues. I agree. If you guys, and you know, we'll be happy to kind of try to set it up so you guys can all do this with each other, because I think it's powerful. So we have I have a bunch of things typed up from people that have asked questions. So while you guys are listening to this question, think about what you want to ask, because we always like to have live back and forths as well. But I'll start with this one.
Just because we kind of answered this one a little bit.
Okay.
Okay, this one, because that's
so me. I don't remember who this is from, and I guess it doesn't matter. Hi, team. My 12-year-old is opening up more, and I'm loving my connection with her. But if she tells me something going on with some friends, sometimes I agree with the friend's point of view and not my daughter's. Sometimes I end up being the bad guy in her eyes because I don't agree with her. I try to remind her to be kind and empathetic, and she loses her patience with me quickly. How can I maintain my point of view and my connection with her? Sorry, I can't be at the Zen Talk tomorrow, blah, blah, blah. So let me start and then you finish. Kathy and I actually surprisingly went through something like with this yesterday morning. Kathy had a thought and she wanted some support.
Oh.
And I, if I were in that exact same position as she was, I would not have been as impacted by it. And what I did in that situation was basically reacted the same way that this mom did. I don't know who wrote it, was I didn't specifically or overtly agree with the other person's point of view, but I did not connect with Kathy on this topic. And what I'm learning about empathy, because empathy is an evolving subject for me. It's not that would I act exactly like this in this situation, and if I don't, then I cannot be empathic or empathetic in that situation. What I learned literally yesterday is, can I think of another situation where I would get frustrated? And that's what Kathy helped point out to me. Like, okay, well, if this wouldn't have frustrated you, how about this scenario? I'm like, oh, absolutely. And I can come up with evidence of how I get really impacted by it.
Well, and let me just explain it, since he's probably trying to be general because he doesn't know if I want you to share it, and it's fine. Basically, there's a lot of people that that I work with who, or you know, maybe I've been supporting or helping, and these people sometimes want to do what I'm doing for a living. They want to become a coach, and you know, they'll be like, "Oh, I listened to your podcast, and I've read your books, and I've read other people's books, and I listen to other people's podcasts, so I want to be a coach," and which is great. Like, that's not a problem in itself. But then I have these experiences, like where someone actually just the other day emailed me a suggestion about something that I was talking about. And I was like, and again, the word offended is really strong, but it's somebody who is not in this line of work, who kind of was suggesting something that I talk about a lot, which is using humor with our kids. And I was just kind of like, I'm like, wow, that's really like off-putting for me for a second that someone's saying like, Kathy, you should really consider this. And I'm like, yeah. And so I was saying to Todd, that is off-putting to me, but I want to rethink through that, like where my ego's involved in this. And like, and Todd was like, yeah, you should just, you know, drop that thought, or yeah, you know, why are
you
do the work, or why are you bothered by this? And then I finally said, after a 30-minute conversation, Todd, if someone at JVI, which is, that's Todd's business, somebody who was in a completely different job than you, he's been there 22 years, said to you, here's how I want you to interact with your client, wouldn't that offend you? And Todd was like, yeah, that happened once and I yelled at the person. I was like, okay, that's what I'm talking. I didn't yell at anybody, but I've been doing this work for 20 something years. And then someone who like read some books was like, here's what you do. And it's not that they don't have the right to do that. I was trying to kind of work with my own ego on it, but my emotional response was initially like, you don't see me at all. Like, you know, like this is some work I've done. So once he said, once he was able to say, yeah, that pisses me off when people tell me what to do in an area that I know, you know, I'm like, that's all I've been looking for through this whole conversation, is I haven't been looking for ways to stomp out my ego or ways to do the work sheet through it. I just wanted to hear you say, yeah, sometimes that offends me too.
Well, and this is like validating, you know, it's funny. I've been doing this podcast for X amount of years and feel like I know how to communicate with Kathy, and I still struggle sometimes. And I learned something new literally yesterday morning. Just because this situation I would not have been provoked by, that's not what empathy is. Empathy is, can I relate? Not necessarily to the exact situation, but the feeling of being frustrated or not heard or not seen.
Well, and again, I know exactly what you're saying, and you're saying, can I relate? But when you're saying, just because I wouldn't be provoked by this, the truth is you would be provoked by
I
it.
I would, but not...
Not in my identical situation.
Not in your example. So what I did was I detached, or I withdrew, or I disconnected, because I put myself in that specific scenario and I missed an opportunity to connect with you. And what I need to do next time this happens is think of something that I can relate to and feel the same way you're feeling.
Correct.
And I just kind of like, I undid it. I screwed it up.
Well, and it was just so funny when Todd's like, oh yeah, I got really angry and I yelled at him. I'm like, okay, that's exactly what I'm talking about, but I'm not yelling at anybody. But her react, what, you know, this question is about is I relate to the other child instead of my own child. And the thing is your child is telling you a story and they are both protagonist and antagonist, meaning you're only hearing their story. And really all they want you to do is hear their story. Mm-hmm. They're not coming to you and saying, judge me, you know, tell me why I'm doing this wrong. Now, if they said something like extreme, like, oh, and then they, you know, said this, so I hit them. Well, yeah, you say, you know what? Hitting is not okay. And we don't do that in our family. But when you're just hearing maybe a conversation between your child and the way that they're explaining the other child, we can ask questions like, well, what do you think they felt about it? Or how did you feel afterwards? Like, we can always like dig into the conversation, but to say, I don't agree with you at all is disconnection.
Yeah.
Because, and you don't have to fully agree with them, but it sounds like she's really saying to her daughter, I don't agree with you. Mm-hmm. And that's why her daughter's getting frustrated, because she, what do we all want? And again, this all goes back to this base stuff. Seen, heard, understood, right? Even if we're not making the greatest choices in the moment, like going back to my conversation with Todd, I don't feel great about being offended by someone because I know that there's something deeper in it and I know I need to work through it. Like, it's not like I love to be offended. I don't look for opportunities to be offended. But it happens. And I, what I'm looking for from somebody is, does that ever happen to you too? Because that normalization dissipates my own feelings. But if I go to someone and say, yeah, I was struggling with this, or my friend was making me angry, and all that person reflects back to me is, no, you're wrong. No, you're wrong. That I'm just going to keep, that's hard. That's hard to, but you know, and again, the person doesn't have to say, you're right, I'm on your side. But they could say, well, tell me what happened and tell me how you felt and how did it end?
And how did I react yesterday?
Well, it ended up good.
No, at the very beginning, what was my initial reaction?
You told me to do a worksheet.
Well, that was when we had lunch. But originally I said, oh, how would I respond to that email? I just say, thank you.
Right.
Which is not a good idea.
Well, it didn't. It was jumping to the chase of solving it rather than recognizing.
So once again, I was wearing my problem solving hat.
Yeah.
And we've talked about this on the podcast. And this is why this is so interesting. I know this. I know to validate first and try to problem solve maybe later. But I didn't do it. I didn't practice it. I was out of practice. So
I think as spouses, as friends, as parents, we try to jump to the solution before wading in to the discomfort of the issue. Mm-hmm. And the discomfort of the issue means we may be thinking to ourselves, I don't fully agree with you. Or we may be thinking, what does this mean? Or we may be thinking, oh, my child is not handling this well. Or we may be thinking, why is Kathy so offended? But you got to stay there to do the normalization, the validation, the connection. And then it's, if I would have gotten that, then I would have probably said, what do you think I should do?
You would have been more open to the problem solving at that time.
Yeah. So it's just skipping a step. That's all.
So hopefully that helps. I have more questions, but I want to open it up to anybody live. Does anybody want to raise their hand or type in the chat box and have something that they want to chat about? Something they're stuck on? Something they want to, we don't have to do anything specific. All right. Well, oh, there's Jennifer. Okay, hold on. What do you got?
Hi. So I guess what I have really kind of relates to all of this, and especially the podcast from this week, because I have been experiencing some disconnection with my teenage son lately, and listening to everything that Kimmy was talking about and you guys are talking about on the podcast, I'm kind of trying to figure out what my responsibility is. And I'm also trying to figure out why I think I feel too much responsibility. Mm. But I don't, so let me explain. So there, I guess my son and I have always been really close, but as a teenager, obviously he's pulling away and, but we still managed to kind of get along most of the time. And we had like a big blowout fight and it was bad. And, it was interesting because when we were talking about it afterwards, he's like, oh my gosh, mom, that was such a long week. I mean, I really, you know, I was just mad at you for a week. And when I actually pointed out to him that it had actually only been 2 days, I was like, it's actually only been 2 days that we've been fighting like this. And he was like, well, it felt like a week.
Right.
So, and so I said to him, I said, well, in some ways, I guess it's good that it felt like that because you hated it so much. And so did I. But I, what I'm trying to figure out is like, I'm the grown up. So I need to deal with my stuff and I don't want to put it on him. Yet sometimes my stuff is triggered by what he does. So I guess the question is, when we get into a situation where he and I aren't seeing eye to eye, and rather than go down that like emotional track, basically the emotional track I go down is, and this is how it relates to what Kimmy was talking about, my mom never would see me, hear me, or understand me. So my goal as a parent has always been, I never, ever, ever want my children to feel that way. I never want them to feel the way that my mom made me feel. So then when we have these conflicts and I feel like, oh my gosh, am I being like her? Am I letting him down? Am I being a bad mom? I think right now I feel like when they were younger, I kind of would think like, oh, they'll just kind of forget about it and they won't really remember this. And now I feel like that he's older, like, oh my gosh, this could be the one thing that really traumatizes him. And then what will that say about my ability as a mom? Because my greatest goal in life is to be a good mom and be a better mom than my mom was to me. So I guess my question is, am I putting too much, I know I'm putting too much pressure on myself, but I guess, am I putting too much weight in, I guess I'm being like fatalistic. Like if I mess this up and I screw up my kids, well, then that's it. Like, what was the point of me even being a mom? Like I'm screwing them up.
What about when you do screw up and they have pain or suffer or that's when they learn a lot of stuff, right? Like, I don't know. I feel like you're really putting way too much responsibility on yourself.
Well, let me start from the beginning. First of all, the first thing that so the answer to your question is yes, you're putting too much pressure on yourself. And this is why, because you have pain from childhood about that your mom didn't get you and you're wearing those glasses as a parent. So every experience that you are trying to keep from happening is because you fear your son will feel what you felt as a child, but that's impossible because he's not you and he's not in the same situation you were in. So you're trying to keep something from happening that isn't even real because that's all yours. It's great that it's your motivation, meaning that you're taking your pain and you're saying, I wasn't understood. So my goal is to understand my kids. That's a great goal, but the fear about, okay, we had a fight, so that means he's feeling what I felt as a kid. Totally not true. You got to let him have his own life, like not wear the glasses of your past and wear the glasses of present time mom and son who's separate from you. And then the other piece is that, there was another part. Give me one second. Oh, you said my goal with my kids is to make sure that they're always heard, understood. And I love that too, because that's super important to me. But not to the point where I sacrifice myself. Mm-hmm. Meaning that yes, 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 I want them to be heard, seen, validated. But once I start to self-sacrifice or self-betray, I'm never going to be able to do that well. meaning that, like, for example, I'm just using this because I always use what's just most current, like the story I told at the beginning about last night, Todd and I went to see Rob Bell last night, and he had invited us and we were going, and it was a done deal, right? We were going. And then my daughter came home on Tuesday and said, oh, it's Fine Arts Fest that night and I want to go there. And we're like, that's fine. We'll get you a ride. We'll get you there. But I had no, you know, I wasn't going to change any plans. And then, like I said, we got her there. I got her a ride. It was all taken care of, but she was still pissed that we didn't go. And I will acknowledge her feelings. And I said to her, I'm so sorry we weren't there. I'm so sorry we disappointed you. I will own that, but I also won't feel bad about it. Do you see you can have both? Like, mm-hmm. I will own that she feels disappointed because of something I did or didn't do, but I will also not turn it against myself and say, I really messed up, because I didn't. This was a plan I had for months and they knew about it. And she said, will you make sure I can get there? And I took care of business and got her there, but it wasn't what she wanted. But that, I'm not going to self-betray. Like, and again, I know that's not exactly the same mm-hmm. as your son, but it's that you're important too.
Well, and I would also add, our daughter is not used to us not being available, because mm-hmm. we go to everything. We go to all the music. We go to all, she doesn't do sports, but we go to all the festivals. And this really is one of the, and we didn't drop the ball, but this is one of the first times that we didn't go. And this is new for her, and she's 10 years old. And to Kathy's point, you can create the space. We're creating the space to let her have her feelings, but we're certainly not going to attach any shame or guilt as a result of that.
And so, Jen, you're going to do that with your son and yourself. Mm-hmm. He has a right to feel the way he feels, and he may want, you know, he's a teenager. He's growing up into a man. He doesn't want all your advice or your, you know, he's pushing, which is totally normal. And then on your side, you're not supposed to be like perfect at this. You're mm-hmm. not supposed to be like, well, I have the perfect thing to say, or I'm going to validate you no matter what. Because when your emotions run high, just like we were talking with Kim, like, you have an emotional experience, you have a trigger, and that's okay. And you're not going to let yourself down in the process. You're not trying to win. You just have to honor him and you mm-hmm. simultaneously. So that's why when you said, am I being too hard on myself? Yes.
Yeah, we know that for sure.
That I know for sure. But then the process of, like, what does that look like in relationship with your son? That's for you. Like, it's like, how do I show up for him, listen to him without the baggage of my history? Mm-hmm. And then at the same time, make sure that he sees me as a human being too. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I have a life kind of thing. I mean, that we could say that, but our kids don't. I'm a human being with emotions too, because he's in relationship with you and he is learning how to be in relationship with all other people through this interaction with you. Mm-hmm. So if you're like, oh, I did it all wrong, or that's not good for him.
Right.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Jen.
Sorry. I think that, that's kind of what happened. Like, I felt so, it was probably the worst fight we ever had.
Yeah.
So I felt so bad about what I kind of decided was causing his pain. Like, I caused his pain, and how terrible I am that I caused it, that I did start to self-betray, because yes. I started to say, oh my gosh, all the reasons why we got into this fight, I shouldn't have done this, this, and this. But they all, once I calmed down, upon reflection, like, there were all legitimate things that needed to be addressed, and I probably should have addressed them more along the way, but it was like a buildup to this. Yes. And I dialed it back. At first I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so ashamed of myself. I'm the worst mom in the world. This is terrible. Like, I can't believe, you know, I did this. And then when I did calm down and he and I talked about it, I was like, you know what, the things I got upset about were legitimate. The way I handled it wasn't legitimate.
Beautiful.
Or wasn't as good as I would have liked to. And that's what I had to differentiate with him, because mm-hmm. I really was. I was starting to just not be who I am. And it felt so uncomfortable. And then a couple things that have come up since then have been kind of tinged with that. And I had to catch myself, like, he wasn't happy with a couple of rules that we had. And this is a whole other discussion for another day, but all the kids around here, and I'm sure around you guys, are playing that Fortnite game.
Yes. We hear about it all the time. Yep.
So He's never been into shooting games. He's never played any of those violent video games. We've never allowed them in my house. Like, it's really where I've drawn the line. Like, we don't play games where we're, even if it's imaginary, where we're harming people.
Yeah.
So he recently asked for it. And, you know, I said to him, you know, absolutely no. I mean, I say yes to him a lot. Like Rob Bell said, like, try to say yes as much as you can. But in that moment, I was like, oh no. Am I going to go back to this place? We're going to get in this fight. I'm going to feel bad. Then I'm going to give in. And then I'm like, no, don't self-betray. So you're right. Like, I really have to keep those two things separate. Yes. And that shame spiral of dealing with my own issues from my childhood and my mother definitely like puts me in a tailspin. And that's why with Kimmy, I could relate so much to what she was saying, because it's so powerful. Because I think with the mother issues, like, we have these fantasies in our head. Like you said, we tell these stories about what our relationship should be like with our moms. And when it doesn't happen that way, we do, at least I do, I feel like, what's wrong with me?
Right.
That we can't have this relationship. And that's a terrible way to feel. Like, there's something wrong with me that this story isn't coming true. And so it gets all wrapped up. I mean, being a mom and then dealing with reframing your relationship with your own mom. And it's so emotional. So Kimmy, I'm like totally right there with you. And I mean, I could cry right now too. So.
Well, and I feel like this is a good time to differentiate the difference between guilt and shame. And most of you, or maybe all of you, already know this. And I don't know if this is Brené or what, but guilt is when you feel bad about something you did. Shame is when you feel bad about who you are. And I feel like, you know, maybe Jen, I don't even know if there's parts of this where you don't feel like you handled it as perfectly well with your son. I don't think there's anything wrong with saying, hey, buddy, I could have handled that a little bit better. But the minute that it plummets to the depth of your soul and all of a sudden childhood baggage shows up, you know that that's not the truth. That's ego, whatever.
And even that feeling, Jen, or any of us, where we're like, I'm not being treated well, or I'm not being treated the way I wish I was, what's wrong with me? That's very childlike thinking, right? That's what children do. They think anything, even if they're being abused, or they're like, it's my fault. And what you have now, because, and again, that comes up. I'm not saying you're thinking like a child. What I'm saying is now you get to, when that comes up where you're like, what's wrong with me? You can parent yourself and talk to that little girl inside of you. This is what inner child work is. And say, and I even have a picture of myself as a child all over my house. Like, I've got one by my desk, one upstairs, and talk to her and say, this is not your fault. You know, maybe the adult me could have handled that better. You know, like, I take responsibility for whatever, but the shame you're feeling, this isn't your fault. You know, like, let her off the hook. And why the picture is important, because sometimes we view the little person in us as we are now, and you need to see how young you are. Our friend Kevin yesterday, we took him to see Rob Bell with us, and he was telling a story about how his parents they never got sick. And so when he would feel sick, they would say, oh, it's in your head, just go to school.
And psychological.
They're like, it's psychological. Go to school. So he was in first grade and he was so sick, but his parents were like, no, it's psychological. Well, he went to school and threw up everywhere. They sent him to the nurse and he said, don't even bother calling my parents, because they told me they're not going to come pick me up. And then I said, Kevin, you were in first grade. And I go, yeah. I go, now picture a first grader in your head or think about, look at a picture of your children when they're in first grade. Look at how small you were.
Yeah.
And that you already had that weight. And his parents are lovely. It's not about, aren't your parents horrible? It's about, Jen, when you can start to see that little girl who had that feeling of, this is all my fault, you're going to be like, oh, honey, it's not your fault. And we can all do that. Like, I'm saying, I do this all the time. Like, you know, that's what, and it, especially if we kind of are the, you know, people pleasers, and that's just part of who we are, we think everything's our fault. Or, like, you know, Kimmy was saying, we think we can fix it. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe we didn't cause it, but we are in charge of fixing it. And that was our child, too, inside, that we thought that to keep our family intact, we had to, that we were really holding everyone together. And that was not the case. Mm-hmm. So anyway.
And I like your idea of getting the picture.
Yes.
Because I was in therapy and she asked me to do some inner child work. And it was like, I can pretty much share anything in therapy. I'm very open. But when she said, all right, you know, talk to the little girl and what would you say to her? And I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
I could not do it. And I was like, oh my gosh. So I think getting the picture would really, really help because I will see that little me and yeah. All right. So thank you guys very much.
You bet. And just get to know her again. Like, you know, like you said, it can be hard to like jump to, I'm going to parent you right away. Just get to know her again. Like look at her and be like, I remember you and you live in me. And a lot of what we're doing now is because of our pain then. And then you can, you know, then gradually over time you will parent her differently. And basically what that means is you will treat yourself with more respect. That's right. What it means.
Thank you very much.
You're yes. welcome. So she sent an email and she doesn't want to talk, but can you grab that or print it?
Yes, I got it. I got it. Okay. So like she said, I won't use any names, but there was some question. There was a question about a child who, and I can't remember how old she is, but that she's struggling with a lot of anxiety. And
she's 14.
14. Thank you. She's struggling with a lot of anxiety. She's 14. Her grades are going down. She's not turning things in. She's dealing with some questioning of her own sexuality right now. So that's very much on her mind. And the mom who wrote the email was saying that she actually took her phone away.
She says you can say her name.
Oh, I can? Okay. Thanks, Mimi. Mimi took her phone away because she was thinking if you're not turning your schoolwork in, then you're not going to have this to distract you. Okay. I was actually in the middle of writing you an email, Mimi, because the thing I was going to say, because then you talked to somebody else who was like, maybe you should talk with a psychiatrist about this. And it just feels like there's just all these things happening at once and they all stem from her anxiety right now. So that's the first and foremost thing. I'm not saying that school isn't important. Of course it is, but her issues at school are stemming from the anxiety she's feeling. So it's like you can go to the core if it be helping her, you know, finding her someone that she can talk to at the school, could be a social worker, or having them recommend a counselor or a therapist. But that's the thing that needs to be, because everything she's experiencing is stemming from that place of anxiety. And a lot of times as parents, we're trying to, you know, you may still hold onto her phone. I'm not saying you have to give it back to her right away, but we're trying to control it from a level up here when really everything's happening down here. And we're like, I'm going to take away your phone, which could be the greatest thing. I don't know your daughter, but it could cause her more anxiety. Do you see what I mean? Like if she's feeling separate from the world or from people she depends on, you may need to put boundaries around it. Like you can have it for 2 hours at night. Or maybe it's better if she doesn't have it. Again, that's your call as her mom. I have no idea what to do there. Taking away screens from our kids has never worked. Okay.
Yeah, Kathy just offered taking away screens from her kids when in similar circumstances never has worked. They dug in even more. Yeah. And without knowing much more than what I'm hearing, I don't know. And that doesn't mean you let them sit on their phone like from 3 p.m. till 10. Obviously there's boundaries and all that. But if you find yourself where you're in a battle where you're trying to win, and I'm not saying that's where Mimi is, but as a parent, I know sometimes I want to win something. And that is my
indicator.
That's my indicator that I probably need to look at this a little bit differently.
And Mimi, maybe like it's not about solely winning, but you're trying to solve the problem. You're like, you're not turning anything in. Your grades are going down. How can I solve this? I'll take away your phone. It's a very valid, you know, route to go. I understand that thinking, but I think that when our kids' grades are going down or when they're struggling, it usually has to do more with their emotional experience or what they're experiencing. Again, because you already know she's dealing with anxiety. It's, I'm going to focus on that with you. And you may feel like, well, I don't have the tools to do that. And that's why you definitely need a therapist or a counselor or even the social worker at school. Because I know therapists can be expensive sometimes. There's a whole, you know, trying to find the right fit. But I think that you need to work with a professional to find her the support she needs. Because that's a lot. You know, she's thinking about her sexuality. She's 14. Her grades are tough. Like, she needs a grounding force. And as parents, we can be part of that grounding force, but I think sometimes we have to be cool with bringing in professional help too.
Mimi also offered in the chat box, well, she's also upset because she says she can't talk to me because I think it's a phase.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is in a roundabout way, Mimi, going back to what we were talking about with Kim and what we were talking about with Jennifer, is that like your daughter is trying to say, this is who I am. I'm struggling. Validate my experience rather than think I'm just going through a quick phase. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not that we validate and say, oh yeah, you have so many problems. It's not that we say that. We just say, I see what's happening right now. I am hearing your pain. I am so sorry that you're having to deal with so much. How can I help you? Just stay with her in the moment rather than jumping to you'll get through this or it's a phase. Mm-hmm. 'Cause that's kind of like, again, bringing the threads all together. That's kind of like what Todd was doing with me yesterday, is I was basically trying to say, am I normal? The fact that I'm offended, am I like a bad, non-compassionate person because I'm offended?
And when I got that opportunity, I didn't behave or say the right thing that made her feel less connected with me. And probably, you know, your brain started thinking like, what's wrong with me?
If you, not just between Todd and I, but Mimi, between you and your daughter, or any of us, between anyone we love, if we feel heard and seen first, then we're open to anything else.
Always start there.
If you're not feeling heard and seen, then nothing else can be heard or done. Mm-hmm. Everything is just this. And we may keep doing things or taking phones or shutting off TVs, but when I say we lost them, I don't mean forever.
Lost them that day.
In that conversation.
That opportunity.
Yeah, that opportunity. That's a good way to say it.
And they'll always give us another chance.
That's right. So Mimi, going back to the beginning, you know, like, and you were saying, I don't allow her to have a relationship. The thing about that, and I understand because you're thinking she's young, she will have relationships even if we say, you can't do this. You can set boundaries about you can't have certain relationships within our home, or you can't, you know, in our home, you sit in a public area, you know, where everybody else is with your friend, or you can have boundaries around what you think is appropriate as far as their age. But she will, because she goes to school, I assume she goes to school, our children will have relationships even if we say,
don't,
you can't.
Yeah.
Because they have their own life where we're not there for that 8 hours of the day. Mm-hmm. And so instead, it's how do I understand her relationships? How do I make sure she can communicate to me about her relationships? But of course, sometimes there's other things involved, like, you know, you have a set date, like, or, you know, when you're 15, you can start dating, or, and I understand that. And if that's the case, then make sure she understands what your limits are. But I guess sometimes as parents, we think that we say, you can't have a relationship with this friend and it doesn't always work.
Yeah.
They basically just do it behind our back.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's better for us if we stay connected and remain a resource for our kids rather than someone they're trying to hide from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Keep it safe. Keep them safe and stay connected as best you can. So we are 63 minutes in, so we'll close there. I had a few things. One is, I don't know when the next Zen Talk is going to be, but we'll shoot you an email. Secondly, if any of you guys want to communicate with each other doing the worksheet or whatever, you have Facebook available to you, but if I can be of help to kind of connect you guys in between sessions, we're completely open to ideas.
One idea that I have is when I went to school at the PCI, the Parent Coaching Institute, we did everything over the phone, and we actually had buddies within the program that we would do our coaching with. And it doesn't always have to be the same person, especially because there's so many people on Team Zen, you might want to get to know other people. But maybe Todd or I will post something on Facebook that if you want to have the opportunity to be put on a list where someone may contact you to do some of this work together, or even just to know each other. You don't have that, again, not school. You can do whatever you want with this information. But maybe we'll get phone numbers and stuff like that.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I guess this is, you know, Team Zen is an unfolding,
an organic experience.
Project, and we love doing it. We're going to keep doing it. But if there's a way that, because I would hate that you're like, oh, I wish this happened more often. Obviously, there's time restrictions for Kathy and I, but there's a community of almost 70, mostly moms. And if we can somehow be the vehicle to kind of connect you guys before, during, or after Zen Talks, let us know and mm-hmm. we'll do whatever we can to help you.
And we'll brainstorm too.
Yeah.
And maybe start something and then maybe it can morph into what it's supposed to be over time.
Yeah.
So
the last thing is, so this will officially close the today's Zen Talk, but I'm still trying to mess with the technology. So I want to pull up, so I don't know if this is going to work. That's why I wanted to wait.
Can I leave now?
You can leave now.
I love you all. Bye.
So there's a quick cartoon of Brené Brown's voice talking, and it's a difference between sympathy and empathy. And I'm going to pull it up on YouTube right now. And like I said, I don't know if you're going to be able to see it or hear it. So if it's a failure, then I will just try to figure out a different way. But I'm going to click on it and then click on sharing screen. So let's see.
So what is empathy and why is it very different than sympathy? Empathy fuels connection.
Can you guys see it?
Sympathy drives disconnection. Empathy, it's very interesting. Teresa Wiseman is a nursing scholar who studied professions, very diverse professions where empathy is relevant, and came up with four qualities of empathy. Perspective taking, the ability to take the perspective of another person or recognize their perspective as their truth. Staying out of judgment, not easy when you enjoy it as much as most of us do. Recognizing emotion in other people and then communicating that. Empathy is feeling with people. And to me, I always think of empathy as this kind of sacred space when someone's kind of in a deep hole and they shout out from the bottom and they say, I'm stuck, it's dark, I'm overwhelmed. And then we look and we say, hey, I'm down. I know what it's like down here, and you're not alone. Sympathy is, ooh, it's bad, uh-huh. No, you want a sandwich? Empathy is a choice, and it's a vulnerable choice, because in order to connect with you, I have to connect with something in myself that knows that feeling. Rarely, if ever, does an empathic response begin with at least. And we do it all the time because you know what? Someone just shared something with us that's incredibly painful and we're trying to silver lining it. I don't think that's a verb, but I'm using it as one. We're trying to put the silver lining around it. So I had a miscarriage. Oh, at least you know you can get pregnant. I think my marriage is falling apart. At least you have a marriage. John's getting kicked out of school. At least Sarah is an A student. But one of the things we do sometimes in the face of very difficult conversations is we try to make things better. If I share something with you that's very difficult, I'd rather you say, I don't even know what to say right now. I'm just so glad you told me. Because the truth is, rarely can a response make something better. What makes something better is connection.
All right, there we go. So I'm going to stop sharing it. So I don't know how that's going to come out. Could you guys hear it and see it pretty good? Oh, good. I'm so glad. Because I totally want to build that into these Zen Talks because there's all these amazing resources and I'm still figuring out the stupid technology. So bear with me. So, all right, guys, that's it for today. We'll send you an email out. We'll send you the links to today's Zen Talk. Love you guys. Keep trucking. Happy Friday. Be good. Adios.